We're going to look at how do you work with multiple tables and indexes today. So before I do that, I want to just review the normal form. So if you go into notes and handouts, there is a relational database information that says normalization rules, and click on that because that's what I want to look at. Okay, so when you design a database, the database is made up of tables, and a relational database is made up of tables in third normal form. And relational databases are still the predominant way of doing it. Big data has some other rules. And so if you get into big data with a company that's doing that, then the rules are going to change slightly. But a relational database is still the way most companies go. And it basically has multiple normalization rules. But the first three are the ones that are considered really important. And those are the ones that people tend to follow. So, when you set up the tables, you want to follow these rules, and these will establish how you're setting up the tables. Okay, a relationship is in first normal form if it does not contain repeating groups. Okay, so what's a repeating group? Does anybody remember?
A repeating group could be description of some type of item on an invoice. It could be city, estate, could be anything that is common within the database itself.
Right. So, you know, one of the examples, as you said, is something that repeats like items. If I buy 10 items, okay, and I always tell the story, which you've probably heard me tell before, of trying to place an order, the person saying, okay, you're done, after I'd ordered something like 5 things and I wanted something like 7 or 8. And I said, no, I've got some more. And she said, no, that's all I can take. And so I said, but I want some more things. And she said, all right, then you're going to have to give me your name and your address and everything all over again. So clearly what she had was slots that could hold 5 different items that I wanted, repeating groups. And once I'd gotten those 5 slots filled in, she had no place to add item 6 that I wanted. So she had to make it a whole new order. And it was also designed, apparently, that she couldn't bring up my name and address again. So she had to bring up and ask me my name and address, and I had to give her all that information. And then we did a repeating group of the 2 or 3 things left that I wanted. Okay, so that's not a good plan. I mean, the other thing is, if the college decided students would have repeating groups on their courses. Okay, so when you hit 30 courses, I'm sorry, you can't take any more, because we only have room for 30 courses. Okay, so that's the problem with repeating groups. A relation is in second normal form if it is in first normal form, and no non-key attribute is dependent on only a portion of the primary key. So what that basically translates to is a primary key can be made up of multiple fields. Okay, you can have 2 or 3 fields, and we'll look at that, go together to make up a primary key. You can't have data on there that relates to only a part of that primary key. The data has to relate to the entire primary key. Okay, you can't relate to part of it, and we'll look at that, as I said. And a relation is in third normal form if it's in second normal form and if the only determinants it contains are candidate keys. Okay, so a candidate key is you have a student ID number. If indeed they're storing your social security number, that's a candidate key because it also uniquely identifies you. And it could have been used as a key, except it's illegal to use it. But 15 years ago or whatever, that's what the key was here at the college, was your social security number. Okay, so that is a candidate key, and that's fine, but I can't have a determinant. So, for example, if I have your major code on the record, okay, so I put in that you're a CI major, then if I go and want to put in the name of the department, okay, I can't put that on the table because the name of the department relates to the department code that I put in for you, not to your student ID. It relates to the department code. And think about the practicality of that. We decide to change the name of the department. We don't want to go in and change it on everybody's record. We want to change it once on a side record. Okay, so those are very practical things about the normal form that you have to follow when you are creating a well-developed database. Okay, so those are the basic rules. Then the other rules are, or not rules, are relationships. And if you are going to have relationships, you can have a one-to-one relationship. You can have a one-to-many relationship, and you can have a many-to-many relationship between two tables or three tables or whatever. One-to-one is probably not used as often. But one-to-one might be that I have an employee basic information and an employee more confidential. Information. And I set it up so that the basic one everybody has access to, the confidential one only management has, some level of management has access to. So on the basic one, I've got name, address, and things like that. On the confidential one, I have things like pay, things like manager comments, something like that, so that I have two records for every employee. They have the same ID, but they have different information on them. So that would be a one-to-one relationship. Okay? A one-to-many might be if I place an order, I have my orders. Okay? So an order has on it the order number and the customer number and a few other things. And then I might have an order line items. And these would have on it the order number and the item that I ordered. And how many, the quantity, and other things about that. So that I have one order can be for many products. The products are over here on the order line, where I'm saying the order 123, I can order item 1,000. And for order 123, I'm ordering item 2,000. And for order 123, I'm ordering some other item. But over here, I just have one order, and that's the customer, and I probably have the date of the order and a few things on there. But that's about the order. So I have a table that's about the order, and then I have a table that's about the elements on the order. Okay. And in fact, that's a one-to-many relationship. Okay, so one order can have many line items. It doesn't have to. If you just ordered one thing, then it will just have one line item. And this system would have two other tables too. It would have a customer table. So if I linked to the customer table, using the customer number, and it would have an inventory table that I could link to getting the item number. Okay. So I can basically link over to other tables. So this particular database would end up having a customer table, an order table, an order line item table, and an inventory table. And I can link around in them. Okay. Now, if you look at the keys here, order number is probably a unique number that is generated automatically when the next order is placed. And if that is true, then this is the thing that uniquely identifies the record, so it's the primary key. Okay? So the primary key is the thing that uniquely identifies a record. So your student ID is the thing that uniquely identifies you. When an order comes in, it will pick up the next available order number. They kind of keep a number going on the system, and so it will pick up the next available order number, and that will be the primary key. Now, when I go to the order line item, okay, I can't use the order number as the primary key because it's not unique. So what could I do there to get the primary key? On the order line item.
You could include the order number along with the order line number as part of the key for the order line file itself.
Say that again. You want me to put a number of to which line it's on?
So, you'd have to, in the orders file, you'd actually have to have a counter to tell how many line items there are in the order line file. And then in the order line file, instead of the key being the order line number, I'm sorry, the order number itself, it could be the order number and the line item number as the key, and that will contain all the records.
Okay. What else could it be, just looking at what I've got up there? I could just combine these two, right?
Yes.
And that's going to give it to me.
I'm sorry, I didn't say it that way, did I?
No, what you said works, and actually I've seen people do that. That works. It's just that what I had up there was going a different direction, so I decided to go the different direction. I'm not disagreeing with what you said. In this case, the only problem with this is you can't let them order the same item twice because in one order, because I've made it to order them. And if, you know, so if I'm ordering 50 things and somewhere down the line I say, oh, wait a minute, I wanted more of whatever, so I'm going to put that in. No, you've either got to do what you said and have a line item type thing so that this is the first time you ordered, ta-da, and then we'll have the second time you ordered, ta-da. Or you have to, say, go back and fix the item number on the other. So the problem with that is if you try to order the same item number twice within the order. Okay? You got to have the contingency plan for it. But that would be the primary key in those two developed. So when I was talking about second normal form, I said everything had to be dependent on the entire key, which means that I can't have something about the item on here. I can't have the item name, for example, on here. Okay, got to go over to the inventory table to get that. Okay, so quantity is fine because quantity is how many of that item I ordered in this order. So it relates to both the order and the item number. So quantity is fine because it relates to both parts. But I can't have anything in there that relates to only one part. So I can't have anything that's specific about the item, and I shouldn't have anything that's specific about the order number, although probably I'm not going to be tempted to do that because I have the order number over on the other table. But I can't put anything about the item number okay? Anything that I want on the item number, I'm going to branch out, and I'm going to have an item file or an inventory file that is going to have the item number, and the item number is going to be its primary key. And then over here, I'm going to have a customer table, and the customer number is going to be its primary key. But now I'm way past the one-to-many relationship that I was originally looking at. Okay, the one-to-many relationship that I was looking at was one-to-many. So that's the one-to-many relationship. That doesn't look like a one there, but that's all right. Okay, now many-to-many, I'm actually going to bring up another page. The best example I think I've seen on many-to-many, and I use this one a lot, is a movie file and a star file. So on the star file, I have the star number, and on the movie, I have the movie number. Those are my primary keys. Now, my problem is that one movie can have many stars. So, therefore, I'm going to get into repeating groups if I try to put all the stars over in the movie table. I'm going to have slots, and when I fill those slots, if I have five slots, then the movie can only have five stars. Okay? If I try, one movie can have multiple stars, and one star can be in multiple movies. So I would have to have repeating groups for them. So what is always suggested is that I have a movie star table, which is called a bridge table. And on it, I would have the movie number and the star number combined as the primary key. Now, there's only a little bit of information that I can carry that has to do with both of these, but salary would be one. So this is the salary that a particular star gets for a particular movie. Okay? So that's the salary that they got for a particular movie. Okay. And if you have other things that relate to the stars in the movie, then you can put it in there. So information about the movie goes in the movie, information about the star goes over in the star, and information about the star's role in the movie goes in the bridge table. And you might have that. You might have the role that they play or something like that, because that would relate to the star in the movie. And the salary relates to what they got paid, what that star got paid for that movie. Okay. So that's a many-to-many relationship. So if you put the rules for third normal form together with setting up these relationships, you basically have the beginnings of starting to create a database. And the one that I started over there was basically the one that I said, okay, we have a customer file, and we put the customer number here as the primary key. And then we can put the name, the address, anything that we want to keep about the customer can be on here. And then we have the inventory file over here. We have the item number, the item name, the cost to bring them in, the price, how many we have on hand, and all that good stuff. Okay, and then we have the order file, which had the order number, and I need to relate that to the customer number. Okay, so the primary key is here, but I have the customer. So what I'm doing now is setting up links. And then I have the order line, which also has the order number and has the item number. And has things like the quantity. And that's the primary key there. It has the quantity. It also might pick up the price. Price quoted. If you want to run into the problem of the price changes a lot, and I want to make sure that I give them the price that I quoted them, not the price that it is today. Maybe I don't fill the order for 2 days and the price goes up. So this, you don't want to carry the same data twice, which is why I call this price quoted. Okay, I use the item number. I linked over here to get the item number. I got the price and I brought it over here and saved it as price quoted, which is a different field. Price is the price the inventory item is selling for today, right this minute, whereas price quoted is what I told the customer they could have it for. And that's the difference. So sometimes you do things like bring that over. So, I drew my link wrong. My link should have been the item name, not, I mean the item number, not item name. Okay, so here's my link between those two tables. Here's my link between those two tables. And here's my link between those two tables. And essentially, the things you use to link are repeated, but you don't want to repeat other things. Okay? Let's say you repeated customer name. That means that if a customer decides to change their name, you've got to go in and find every place you stored it. Okay? If they're removed, you've got to go find every place you stored it. So you don't want to repeat data. You want data to occur only once in one table, maintain it there. But the data that is used as links obviously has to be repeated. So item number is repeated, customer number is repeated, order number is repeated, because those are links. Those are the things that tie it together. And you can't have a table in the database that doesn't link to any other table, or how do you get to it? You know, if there's no links, you're not going to be able to get to it. So, essentially, this is what you're looking for, is setting up the tables, and then once the tables are set up, establishing the primary keys, and once you've established the primary keys, you're all set. And hopefully this works. Now, the design of a database is usually done in a group with IT people involved and people in the business area involved, okay? And they have a discussion about what the data is that they need, how they're going to access that data, how they're going to use that data, whether it's cost-effective. Sometimes somebody will say, it would be really nice to have da-da. Well, storing that and maintaining that is going to be really difficult. So let's weigh how valuable it really is to the company. And so, you know, you kind of start out with the dream, and then you apply practicality a little bit and move it down to what you're really going to do. Okay. So this database has four tables in it, and the four tables are interacting, and they let me process, you know, orders. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of other things that let me update customer, let me update inventory, let me tell whether the orders have been filled. There's going to be a whole lot of other information in here. Okay. These are just the beginnings. Questions? Okay, so that was a brief look at that. Now let's go back and look at how you can set up keys. So I'm going to look at this down here that says keys and indexes, etc., under week 6, because we're still working on. I was overly ambitious or optimistic or whatever, or just put them all together. So we're still working on those. So eventually it will open. And if you want to play and log in, feel free. And I would definitely bring these handouts up. Okay, so how can I get this bigger? View. Anybody know this?
Slide on the bottom right.
Oh, yeah. That was clever. I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, got a little carried away here. That works. Okay. So, I said here, create a table without a key. So I made a table that included an ID number, a name, a department, and a salary. Okay? And I called it without key just to tell myself that it was without a key. And then I did insert into it, and I put in 2 records. Okay. Now I'm going to add a primary key. So I'm saying alter the table without key and add primary key ID number. Okay? So it has now added in a primary key, and ID number is the primary key. If I do a DESC over here under key, I now see PRI, which tells me that it's a primary key. Okay, so I've now added in the primary key. And the main reason for adding in a primary key is to avoid putting in a second person with the same key, because it will not allow you to enter the same person with a key. And if you're going to access this table and work with this table, there's got to be one thing that uniquely identifies as a record. And ID number is going to be the one thing. It's the primary key is the one thing. Now, the primary key can be made up of 2 parts, but it's still the primary key, so it's still considered an entity. Okay, so that's how you can make a key. So I can have a table, I can create the table without a key, and a little bit further down you'll see how to create it with a key. But I can create it without a key and then go back and alter the structure. Because remember, alter is used when you want to change the structure. Okay. Alter lets you change structure. If you want to maintain records, you use insert and update and delete. And those let you maintain records. So you can add records with insert. You can change a record with an update, and you can get rid of a record with a delete. But the alter lets you change the structure. Okay. Okay, so now if I go down a little further, I'm creating an index here. Now, what an index is it's not the key. But an index is something that allows more effective access to a field. So if I decided, in this case, I made the department an index, I might have made the name an index. When I go into a doctor's office, especially if it's at a hospital, the first thing they say is, what's your patient number? And I always tell them, I don't know. And so then they take my name, and they do a search on my name. So they're set up to do either a search on my ID number or my name. I strongly suspect that my name is indexed, which means that they carry a separate kind of area where they have my name in order, and they've got some algorithm where they go in and they look at the middle name, and that, and if I'm less than I'm in the top half, and then they look, you know, for another spot, etc. And they just keep narrowing it down till they find me, as opposed to going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, if they have 10,000 records, going through them all sequentially until they find me. So if I index it, it's going to set up an algorithm that is going to allow them to get my record quickly. And in fact, that's one of the, you know, key secrets that all of the database people have, is how they handle indexes and how they get this record for you very fast. So if I want to set up a key, I say create index on this. So I'm saying create an index, and this is what I want to call it, on this table, and this is the field. Okay, so this is the table, and this is the field. So I'm saying I want to make department on the without key, I want to have an index. Okay, so it sets up a structure that will allow it to index. And the stuff I printed here is, if I say show the indexes, that's what you see, which is reasonably unintelligible, but it basically tells you about the primary key, and it tells you about this one, which I called index department. And if you look down below, it has a notation after department under key that indicates MUL, and I don't remember what MUL stands for, but it basically tells me it's an index. Anybody want to make a guess as to what MUL stands for? Okay.
Multi-key?
Huh?
Multi-key?
That multi is what I suspect.
Yeah, I thought too.
But I don't think it's multi-key, probably. I think it's multi-something, but multi is what I agree. I think it's probably multi. If I want to drop the index, I can now say alter the table, drop the index, and I no longer have it. Okay, so I got rid of it. I can also get rid of a primary key if I want to. And sometimes you want to get rid of a primary key for a moment at least. There is a test that you can do to make sure that a field isn't null. Well, if you go in and add a field, then obviously you've got a problem, because that field's going to be null when you just added it, and you're not going to have data in it. So the null test is going to be a problem. So you can get rid of null, and so you can get rid of things temporarily and drop things and then go in and test them. So I can drop the primary key if I wanted to play around with an ID and wanted to get rid of one and bring one back or something. I can drop it temporarily and then go in and reinstate it. So that allows you to drop everything. And then here's a three-part primary key on an existing table. And you can say, alter the table, add primary key,
I've said the primary fee is going to be made up of the ID number, the drive number, and the contribution fee. So those three fields together are going to be the primary fee, and it wipes pry after each one to tell you that those are the primary keys. Okay? So I can have a single key, or I can have a double key, or I can have a primary key. I think that's the end of that one. Okay. Up here, when I did it as part of creating, where am I? Okay, where's the, I'm looking for the one that I... Actually, I don't think I did. You can go up and look up the syntax. I don't think I actually put it in here. But you can look up the syntax to create the key as you're doing the table. Okay, and there is a syntax for that, but I don't think I put it there. Okay. The next one is I want to look at is multiple tables. Okay. So now I've got multiple tables set up. And we'll make that a little bit bigger too.
Did you skip over subqueries or?
Yes, I did for a moment.
Oh, okay.
Because I think these actually relate better without it. Now I know why I don't like this. I can never get it the way I want it. There's somewhat the way I want it.
Okay. So I've got a donor table. I've got, and the donor table has on it an ID number, name, street address, city, state, zip, date of the first donation, the goal, and the chairperson that's in charge of getting you to give money. And you all must be getting the same wonderful requests for money that I'm getting at this time of year. So basically, this is the way they have it set up. Okay, then I have a donation table. And my donation table has an ID number, a drive number, a contribution date, and a contribution amount. So that's my donation table, and I donate to specific drives, so there's my drive table. And I probably should have taken pictures of these, and I don't think I did, so I'm going to go back and do it. There's donor. There's donation. And now we're down to drive. And drive has drive number, drive name, who's the chair of the drive, how much they made last year, and how much they made this year. Okay, so I've got the drive table as well. So if I want to use multiple tables, this is how I do it. In this case, actually have three fields that I want to get, and I'll talk about how I got those set up for in a second. I want to get that data from the donor field and the donation field. And then I have to tell the link between these two tables. And the link between these two tables is based on an ID number field. Now, interestingly enough, on the donor table, I called it DID number, and on the donation table, I called it ID number. And there are pros and cons to doing that. Mostly, I would say it's a bad idea because I can never remember which is which and keep track of, okay, on this table it's DID number and on this table it's ID number. And if I call them both ID number, then that's better for me personally to keep track of the names.
But when I give them a separate name, then basically I can use the field DID number up here in the select because it is unique. The only thing you can have in the select statement are unique. So, let me take a picture of this and then muck it up.
Okay, so then if I decided that no, up in the donation table, I'm going to change it and I'm going to call it ID number,
then I have a problem up here, and I have to change that and say either donor 2011 dot ID number, or I could say donation 2011 dot ID number,
but I've got to tell it which table the ID number is on. I can't just say ID number and let it guess which table it's on, okay? So, if I have called the field the same thing on multiple tables, then I have to do that. I have to say, don't tell the table and then tell the ID number and then it would be fine.
So in the examples up above, when you were talking about the many-to-many file relationships, and you had customer file, the order line, and the invoice, you had customer number, then you had the order file, and the order file contained the order number and the customer number, and then the order file contained the order number and the item number, and those are all primary keys, so then you'd have to work that nomenclature idea into the actual primary keys.
Absolutely. All of those fields that you just mentioned would have to have table name dot field name.
Right.
Because if the field, if I was using two tables that contained, now it doesn't mean if I'm not using the inventory table and I'm only using the on a line table for something, then I don't have to because it's unique. It's only if I'm using two tables that have item number that I'd have to do that. So the from, if I don't list them in the from, then it's unique.
So aside from using meaningful names that would designate primary keys in relationship between the other tables, is there any other methodology that you can use to keep track of that?
No, I mean, your two choices are to give them unique names or to always refer to them by table name. Now, if you go back to the days when we did Access, and I remember that if you go in and do the SQL in Access, and then you go back and forth long enough, then Microsoft fixes it for you. And when it fixes it for you, it puts the table name on every field, unique or not. It just says we're putting table names on everything because then we're guaranteed that you'll know what table the field is on. It's a guarantee. So when they take your SQL and fix it back to the way they think it should be written, every table name, every field has a table name. And there's also an abundance of parentheses. But anyway, so
name is unique. Con amount is unique, name is only on donor, con amount is only on donation, so those do not need table names.
But the ones that are not unique need table names. Okay? So I would have to change that. Now, once I put a table up there,
I've got to put how these two tables link. If I don't put that FOIA clause in, I will get every possible combination.
So if I've got 6 records on one table and 12 records on another table, I'm going to get 72 records. or 72 lines coming out. Because it's going to do the 6 times 12, give me every combination, and I'm going to see 72 lines come out.
So that where clause that says I only want records where the ID on the donor equals the ID on the donation is critical. Otherwise, you're going to get every possible combination. And it's worthless, basically. So down below, I have 3 tables. And on this one, I was using drive number, and drive number appeared on 2 tables. So I had to say donation, drive number. And it really doesn't matter whether I write donation 2011 drive number or drive 2011 drive number, because it's going to be on both of them. And so it doesn't much matter. And I am linking them on ID and drive number. I'm linking them on those things.
So I list my fields that I want under the select. And then I said, okay, I'm using 3 tables now. So I link the 3 fields. And then when I'm linking 3 fields, I've got to come up with, okay, so I've got the donor, and I'm not writing the 2011, so, and the drive.
Now, the way I want to link these is I want the DID number here, okay, linked to the ID number here, and I want the drive number here linked to the drive number over here. Okay, so I've got the links set up. And in fact, I didn't have to write table on in front of these 2 since they had unique names.
But I usually don't write unique names. And so I just went ahead and did it the way I always do, which is on the where, I always have table.field. Because what I'm linking down there is the thing that they have in common. So that's where they're going to have the same ID because it's the field they have in common. And so I always just write table name dot field name. Now on this one, I did make that change to DID number, so I really didn't need it for this. I could have just said DID number equals ID number and donation drive number equals drive number. There, the fields are the same, so I had to do it. Does that make sense? This is a crash course in database design. 2 or 3 days and we're done. Okay. If you want a more extensive one, take the Oracle course. Because we get into a lot more SQL and everything there. But for now, it's a quick course because we need to get back to using this stuff in with PHP. Okay, questions on this? I think this is the end. Yep, that's the end of that. Questions?
So when you set up an index on a table, and you specify the portion of the table to form the index on,
yeah, you specify which field is making an index on. And as I said, it sets up an algorithm on the side.
Right.
Its problem, not mine, that keeps track of the name in a way that they can get to it faster. And as I said, the obvious way is if they had it all in alphabetical order and I go in with Grossa, then it checks the middle name and says, okay, it's in the top half.
Right.
So one check has eliminated half the names.
Right.
Then it goes into the middle of the top half looking for Grossa, and let's say I'm in still the top quarter now, so I've limited 2 checks, I've limited 75%. and then it just keeps going. Now, in fact, their algorithm is going to be much more sophisticated than that, but that's a very basic kind of algorithm.
I've encountered several instances.
Right.
Can you access the index itself?
I actually don't know that. As I said, I leave that up to you, but I'm sure there's a way you can get to it. I just haven't looked up how to do it because, as I said, they're in charge. I set up the index and the index works. Don't know how private that is kept. Don't know anything. So index may be. Yeah, go ahead while you're contemplating that. You got a question?
Never
mind. Okay. It was a short-lived question.
I had a situation once where we had a file that had 3 million records, and there were several fields being actually indexed, and one of them was the date. It was a payroll voucher file. So a company wanted to have a printout program that would run, and they would supply it dates. And they didn't want to have to run a select statement. You had to actually run a select statement to grab records. But I found how I could directly access the index. So they basically entered in the date, and they would read the index, grab the record key that had the date that was indexed, and then pull all the keys out of it, and then boom, they would run a report based on that.
Okay.
Rather than having to actually have to do within the program, because in the database I was in, you could actually run a select statement, execute it from inside the program. The trick was, if there were no records for that day, it grabbed all the records.
Oh, okay.
So you had to check the system return code on the select statement. So the simple or the easier way to get around that was to say, okay, specify the date, access the link, access the index, read the record, no record, no records, as opposed to, because if you can imagine printing 3 million records, it's...
Yes.
Hi, I'm printing a really huge report and I need to run payroll.
That's right.
So that's the only reason why I asked if you could access the actual index.
And probably for doing that, I would suspect there's a way. I never played with it.
It was more of a curiosity.
No, but it's an interesting curiosity. Okay, the next one I'm looking at is subqueries. One more step in our crash course here. Okay. These are kind of interesting. What I do is as I pointed out to you before when we were talking about flipping the name, one of the big issues with working with databases is this select statement requires that everything be done in the one select statement to produce the results. And the flipping the name, I said, if I was writing in Visual Basic or PHP or anything else, I would go through one step at a time and have different commands. I wouldn't try to put it all in one command. But when you're dealing with selects, you have to. Now, as he pointed out, there are languages where you can insert selects in, and that lets you get access to individual records. And the one we teach is PLSQL as part of the Oracle course. And it basically, PLSQL is combining SQL and a programming language. That's what PLSQL stands for, programming language with SQL. And so it gives you an incredible amount of power. And other databases also have languages like that. But if you don't want to use that, then you're stuck with a select that you've got to try to put the whole thing into. And one of the tools that they give you is this subquery. So what you do is you write a select, and then you say, okay, now I want to compare something, and here's my where. I want to compare something with the result of another select. Well, the other select becomes a subquery. So what I've got here, as I said, I want to select asterisks from donation, where the drive number is in
where the drive number matches whatever comes back from the inner. So what I've got here is, notice, there's drive number, there's drive number. So the inner is going to return drive number. And I'm going to compare drive number to whatever gets returned.
So I've now got select asterisk from donation where the drive number is in. And then I'm going to return a drive number. So now let's look at what it does is it resolves the inner select first. So it goes out and says, okay, select drive number from drive where the drive name equals animal home. Okay? So it goes to the table and it selects his animal home. So it selects drive number 200 because 200 goes with animal home. So what gets returned here is 200. That's what got returned there. So now I'm saying, okay, select everything from donation where the drive number is 200. Because the drive number is in, and I used in because maybe this question had returned more than one thing. The subquery could have returned multiple things, but it didn't. It returned just one because I said I wanted the drive name equal to animal home. So it went to the drive table, found the drive number where the drive name was animal home, and that was 200, okay? So it is returning 200. So up here I now say, okay, now show me everything from donation where the drive number is in that group that was returned. Well, the only thing that was returned was one thing, so it says where the drive number is 200. And you can see that the results all have drive number 200. And there should be questions. I couldn't possibly have explained it that well, folks. There's got to be a question. Then you'll find the question, right? Yes, okay. Yes. Correct reading.
So the in is specified. So correct me if I'm wrong, but the where it says where drive now in, you're specifying where the drive number could be inside of a range of numbers.
Yes, because if I didn't write in there, then I'd only be allowed to return one. And you can write equal. And in that case, if knowing that it was only one, I could have written equal there. But in gives me more flexibility. So if I had said, for example, where last year is less than 10,000, then it would have returned two records, right? So if I had written up here, instead of drive name equals, I had written last year is less than 10,000. Then it would have returned 200 and 300. Okay? If I put that, it would have returned 200 and 300. Because looking down here, the ones that are less than 10,000 are 200 and 300. And so that would have meant that it would have also listed the 300. I only had the 200 there, but it was also listed for 300, so I would have picked up those two lines, and I would have had a total of four lines, because I would have picked up the two lines, okay?
So the actual station?
I would have picked up that line and that line. Those are the two 300s, right? Yes.
So the donation file itself only contains the ID note, driver number, the con date, and the con amount?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
And if I didn't want to see all those, I could have just listed specific fields. If I didn't want to see them all, the asterisk gets me all fields, but...
Where the subsequent selects are just showing the contents of the donation and drive files.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, no, this is the result of the subquery statement.
Right, right, right.
This just says select asterisks from donation. This just says select asterisks from drive. Just so that you can look at the original tables and see where it came from. So when I said drive name equals animal home, it's only returning one record, one ID, and so I'm only going to show up the drive numbers of 2,000. But if I say the less than 10,000, then it's going to return 200 and 300, and I'm going to see four records there. As opposed to the two. Okay. And then I went back just to show how it worked. I showed you this is the resolution of the inner query. And you can see drive number was what would have come up. If I just did the inner query, it says select asterisks from drive where drive name equals animal home. And I show that record. And it's 200, rather. And then I said, okay, now let's look at the outer clun, and the outer one is going to substitute in the 200. So I substituted it in, and I got those same two records. Okay, so that's the order it did those. It did the inner query first, got the 200, then did the outer query with the 200 as the condition. Okay, so that's the way it worked. Okay, on the next one, select ID number, name, year, goal, contact from donor. And now this one, notice the froms, it's using the same table. In the one that I did at the top, the beginning one, I didn't use the same table. I used two different tables. And it does it, you can do either one. You can use the same table or two different tables. So I said, okay, I want to see those fields from donor where the year goal is greater than whatever gets returned from the inner query. And in the inner query, I said, get me the year goal from donor where name is like Ash. Okay? So, if you go and look at that, apparently, if you look down below, I said, just do that. Select year goal from donor where name is like Ash, and I came up with the 50. Okay, so I did the inner one, and it returned a 50. And so then I said, in the outer one, show me all this information where the year goal is greater than 50. And you can see all the names that are shown up there have a year goal greater than 50. Okay? So the inner query got me the number 50 because that's with a name like Ash. And then I said, where year goal greater than 50? And that gets me all of those names in the donor table.
because all of those are greater than 50.
And the word name is like ash. Is that you're basically asking that the name contains
ash.
An A, an S, or an H?
Oh, I'm actually saying that it contains the sequence of ASH.
Oh.
Like anything can come before ash.
With the name is anything comes before ash.
So why did you just get 50?
Because there was only one person that had the name Ash. Susan Ash, I think, was the name.
And I don't remember whether I listed the donor table on this or not. But I happen to remember that Susan Ash exists. No, I don't think I did. On one of these handouts, somewhere along the line.
If you go down further.
Yeah, next page.
Next page shows Susan Ash. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
It's a pretty common name for you to use anyway.
Yes.
So.
Absolutely. I used to babysit for a kid named Susan who lived on Ash Street.
Oh.
A lot of them are just totally made up, but that one actually has... Okay, so... There's Susan Ash at 50. Okay, the next one. I said select name year goal from donor where year goal is greater than or equal to, and I'm using the inner to come back with the average. Now, in fact, do I absolutely need to have a subquery on this one? No. I could just say greater than equal to average year goal, and it would have worked fine. And lots of times, the subquery is an alternative way of doing it. Sometimes you can't think of any other way to do it, but sometimes it's just an alternative. But I could have said where year goal is greater than or equal to average year goal, and it would have come up with that. Now, if I had done that, yeah, that was still all right. Okay. So I am getting the two names that I got. And if you look below, I did the select average year goal, and it came up with 768. And so basically there were only two records that were greater than or equal to the 768. Sometimes I think easier to use subqueries, especially, is when I'm using different tables. Because if I don't do the subquery, then I have to do the linking of the tables. And you know, where using or from, and I list two tables, and then I got to link them together. And I just think it's easier lots of times when you're using the two tables to just go ahead and break it up. So with two tables, I definitely think this is an easy way to go. So here I want to know IDs that meet a certain criteria. So I said go to donation, select the ID number for everybody whose contribution is greater than 20. And then I'm returning that ID number. And then I said, okay, now give me the name and the year goal for those people. Okay. So I've got the name and the year goal for those people. So if you look down below, when I said select ID number from donation where cont amount is greater than 20, it came back with four answers, but two of them are the same. So it came back with 111, which was Stephen Daniels, 12121, which was Jennifer Ames, and 23456, which was Susan Ash. And so that's why I'm seeing those three.
Why did it come back with 1212 twice?
Yeah, because apparently she gave two donations.
Oh, because she... All right, yeah, yeah, okay, sorry. Thanks.
Okay. So she gave two donations. Okay, this one... Yeah. At 41, yeah, we'll save this one for Thursday. Thursday, I'm going to have you do some in class, and we'll finish this off, and then I'm going to have you do some. But looking at the whole thing, I want more than 4 minutes on that, so we're calling it quits. I'm done.